example, the general injunction to cherish others, and which means looking to see them as beings seeking their own fulfilment and trying to do what you can to help them fulfil themselves in the fullest and richest way, just as you are. Then you deliberately reverse your tendency to think of yourself as the most important and put others first as a constant practice. And in order to get deal with the kleshas which will sweep away those intentions, you're constantly on guard for the kleshas. You're constantly on guard for that warning sign of turbulence within the mind, which tells you that a klesha has formed. It's quite a good way of putting it. It forms out of feelings and an underlying need or a lack. Now we get much more specific. The next three verses are to do with the kinds of situation, the kinds of encounter that you have that are most likely to bring about in you a response that's not of the nature of a new mind of bodhicitta, that's not of a transcendent mind, but it is a thoroughly egoistic reaction. The first is when I see ill-natured people overwhelmed by wrong deeds and pain. So you come across ill-natured people overwhelmed by wrong deeds and pain. You know what they're like, those ill-natured people. People who are ill-natured, not necessarily even in relation to you. They may be ill-natured in their reaction to you, but you might be living in a spiritual community, you might be living on your own or whatever, but you see around you people who are behaving in a crude, violent, aggressive, egoistic way, and who are manifesting ill nature in many different forms. Ill nature doesn't necessarily, I think, mean angry. It can be just crude, insensitive, not considerate. And it's the sort of thing that if you are trying to follow a spiritual life, you can very easily get into a kind of contemptuous, superior position in relation to people who you consider to be ill-natured or crude or insensitive or whatever. You can, because you're leading a spiritual life, you can begin to feel yourself to be a little bit removed from all that, and you feel contempt and a disappointment and a desire to react and move away from people who are in that state. But the text says they're not just overwhelmed by wrong deeds, which of course are the expression of their ill nature, but they're overwhelmed by pain. So already we're getting a clue as to the attitude that you need to have, that you sense that ill-natured people are motivated by an attempt to deal with their pain, with their suffering, their sense of lack, their sense of unfulfillment. They're acting in that way because that's the best way they can see to act, to deal with their sense of frustration and pain. And the way they act brings them more pain under the law of karma. So you try to have that sympathetic and appreciative, empathetic attitude, not, you know, a kind of a different kind of contempt where you sit on high and you think, oh, poor people, they're in pain, but a direct response as one human being who feels pain to another human being who feels pain, a sense that what they're doing because they're suffering, as the best way they can see to deal with that suffering. And you see them not as a nuisance and a barrier to your spiritual life, which is the way we can easily think. You see them as something rare, as though I had found a treasure trove. This is where the text gets really quite ridiculous and calls upon us to sort of reverse our usual attitudes and to make quite strong efforts to, as it were, go counter-intuitively or counter-reactivity So you see those people who act in an ill-natured way and who perform wrong deeds, whether directed to you or just in the environment around you, you see them as something rare, as a treasure trove. A treasure trove. You find something, some buried treasure. There's on the news the other night, somebody had found, 4,000 Roman coins in a pot somewhere, digging in the ground, a farmer. And you imagine, he just suddenly finds these. He's just out ploughing, and suddenly there's these coins all there. And he's going to get, I don't know how much money for them. I think they're saying sort of hundreds of thousands of pounds. And so, he's suddenly going to be able to pay off the debts on the farm, or buy another farm, or go on a round-the-world trip, or something like that. Suddenly, all sorts of things become possible for the finder of treasure trove. It's something completely unexpected. You don't think of finding it. It's just suddenly there. So you try to have that attitude. Oh, wonderful, an ill-natured person. What a fantastic opportunity. Why do you feel this? Well, you feel it because the ill-natured person gives you a chance to deal with your own ego reactivity, with your own ego clinging. If you're just with people who are nice to you, if you're just with people who are pleasant, if everything's very smooth, you don't notice your underlying reactivity, your underlying self-clinging. And sometimes it can be extremely useful to be up against people who are difficult, unpleasant, awkward, and so on. And I read this text at a time when I was having a lot of difficulty with an extremely ill-natured and difficult person. Not me, of course. And I found myself quite annoyed with the text for suggesting that this particular ill-natured person could be a treasure trove. But I felt that, I should try to take the text seriously. And sure enough, when you start to sort of think in that way, you think, well, that person is revealing certain reactions in me. Those reactions come out of my own structure of sort of self-understanding, personal clinging, my clinging to myself. They come out of my own illusions, my own understanding of how things ought to be. And they give me a chance to contact what it is that I need to transform. A lot of the time our problem is that we're dealing in a quite superficial way with ourselves. We're tinkering around on the surface. And our spiritual lives don't get us down to the root of the matter. And we rearrange things, even our spiritual lives, so that they don't get us down to the root of the matter. We make slight adjustments so that things are comfortable again. But with this attitude, you see the awkward, the uncomfortable, as your real spiritual opportunity. So it's a very tough lesson, but when you think about it a little bit, a really obvious and necessary one. We need to get to grips with ourselves in a very fundamental way. Our ego clinging is, as we saw in the first night, something that's bred into us, that we're born with it as a result of habits that, according to Buddhist tradition, go way back in our stream of consciousness, or if you want to take a more evolutionary approach, that are bred into us by the whole process of evolution. And that's what we've got to transcend. That's what we've got to move beyond. But our ego clinging and our refined ego clinging means that we're very good at rearranging things so they don't frustrate us, they don't irritate us, and so that we're able to sort of carry on without really dealing with the fundamental issue of things. So other people, their awkwardness, their ill nature, is our gift. That is extremely annoying, this text, in this sort of way. And it really means it. But when you come across a situation where somebody in one way or another irritates you, grates on you, causes you to feel jarred and reactive, you think, you reverse the current of your thinking, and you think, this person is an opportunity for me, presenting me with an opportunity to overcome my reactivity, to get into, back into cherishing others, which is transcending self and going to another level of consciousness, developing that new mind of bodhicitta. So it's an absolutely straightforward daily practice that we can all take on. No doubt we do it to some extent. As soon as you find yourself wishing that somebody would go away, thinking of somebody as the cause of the problem, you know, if you live in a community, there's always one person in the community that the community would be better off without. But actually, they're the most valuable member of the community. And the trouble with talking about these things, you have to put them into practice. So you cherish them as something rare, because they're your real opportunity for self-transcendence. So it's very simple. The difficult situations we encounter, this text says, are our best opportunity for developing bodhicitta, the new mind of bodhicitta. Instead of reacting to them, we take them, we embrace them, see them as a rare opportunity to really cherish another. It's easy to cherish others when they're nice to us, when they're easy to deal with. It's only really a cherishing of others when they're not easy to cherish. Sorry, that's what the text says.